Good afternoon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. You all are the only case on our afternoon docket today for oral submission. So if you all are ready, I'll have the clerk call the case.
The court will now call Northwest Cattle Feeders, LLC, Riley Livestock Incorporated, and Jeff Cox versus Jason O'Connell, Tom O'Connell, Mr. Derek Boyd will argue for the appellant. Ms. Beverly Whitley will argue for the appellate.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. I want to start by apologizing for Alan Williamson and Christy Campbell couldn't be here today. They're picking a jury and started a jury trial over in McKinney. As I told counsel before I walked in, that definitely is the third string in charge on my side of the table here today, as they did all the work in the court below and with respect to the briefs. But I know the court has some familiarity with the facts of this case from the recent opinion concerning the temporary restraining order. So unless there's any questions about that, I'll jump right into what I think is the single
Tell me your name again, counsel. I didn't hear it.
I'm sorry?
I didn't hear your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. Derek Boyd.
Hello, Mr. Boyd.
Nice to meet you.
Welcome to the Second Court.
Thank you, Your Honor. There are a number of parties that were defendants in this case. I think we've narrowed the issue down to two parties, Jason O'Connell and Tom O'Connell, who are the principals, as I understand it, for Midwestern Cattle Marketing, who's already a defendant in the lawsuit below. We've addressed both those individuals in the briefs. Please the court, I will spend most of my time today on the issue of Jason O'Connell, but if the court has any questions concerning Tom O'Connell, I'll be happy to address those. I think the central issue is defined by what appears on page 19 of the appellee's brief, in which they respond to our arguments about Tom O'Connell with this statement. It says, plaintiff's pleading contains no allegation that Tom O'Connell physically performed any act in Texas that constitutes an operative fact. And I would submit to the court that that is precisely why the court has jurisdiction over Jason O'Connell. As we've made clear in our allegations, of course, this is a specific jurisdiction case. It's not a general jurisdiction case. Our jurisdiction argument arises out of the fact that Jason O'Connell committed a tort, based on our allegations, in the state of Texas, which is one of the grounds for jurisdiction under the long-arm statute. We specifically allege that Jason O'Connell seized cattle from a farm in Perrin, Texas, which is in Jack County, and made misrepresentations to our clients that formed the basis of our fraud claim that relate specifically to those cattle that were seized in Texas. I want to talk about three issues this morning that relate to that. First is the burden of proof. Second is this issue about whether Jason O'Connell can be liable individual as opposed to whether he was taking action for the corporation, which this court is familiar with as what's known as the fiduciary shield doctrine. And third, I want to focus on the operative facts, those two operative facts that we believe confer jurisdiction concerning Jason O'Connell. With respect to the burden of proof, as the court knows, once we plead a jurisdictional basis, the burden is on the defendants to negate all possible bases of jurisdiction. Here, the defendants did not do that. They did not negate the fact that the cattle were seized in Texas. In fact, I think they would stipulate to that fact. And they did not negate the fact that the misrepresentations that formed the basis of our fraud claim were made by Jason O'Connell while he was in Texas. What they did in a very carefully worded affidavit was to say that no actions of Jason O'Connell in the past 7 years that he has taken in Texas were committed in his individual capacity. But for the reasons we're going to talk about with respect to the second issue, that doesn't matter. And in fact, that was the single finding of fact that the Judge Isaacs in the trial court found to support her basis for finding there was no jurisdiction. Her conclusion in finding of fact number two was that Jason O'Connell didn't commit any acts in Texas in his individual capacity. That's all they tried to negate, and that's all Judge Isaacs based her ruling on. But for reasons that we've discussed in our brief, the law is clear that for tort claims, that an individual, even if they're acting on behalf of their company, can be liable in their individual capacity for fraud that they participate in or direct. That's black letter law, long-standing law, Texas cases. And in fact, we cite in our reply brief to a recent case out of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. I'm assuming this is not how Texans would pronounce it, but I think it's Trois versus Apple Tree Auction Center. And when we cited it was the Westlaw citation, I now have the F3rd citation for the court, which is 882 F3rd 485. And I think footnote 9 of that opinion disposes of the issue in this case, at least with respect to Jason O'Connell. Because as footnote, that was a fraud case. And in that case, you had an individual that was in Ohio who was accused of fraud and was sued in Texas, in a federal court in Texas, where, as the court knows, they applied the Texas jurisdictional law. And what the court held there was that even though the individual was in Ohio, his fraudulent statements and his participation in the fraud in that phone call to Texas constituted a basis to hold him responsible. And the court rejected the fact that his defense was, I was only acting on behalf of my entity. I was not acting in my individual capacity. And as footnote 9 makes clear the opinion, that's the fiduciary shield doctrine, and that doesn't apply in a specific jurisdiction case. And one thing I would like to call the court's attention to is that's consistent with this court's own precedent, which is a case that unfortunately I did not find in the briefs, but I would cite to that. It's the Riata Restaurants case, it's the defendant, and the court may recall, of course, that arose out of the 2000 tornado, and there was a big insurance dispute concerning the reconstruction of the building. But this court specifically held in that case that a corporate officer or employee is not shielded from the exercise of specific jurisdiction as to torts for which the officer or employee may be held individually liable. And I think that is what that case disposes of the issue in this case as it relates to Jason O'Connell.
Okay. Explain to me what I understand from your briefs that is the seizure of the cattle and what occurred with regard to the proceeds for their sale that you are alleging to have been wrongful as to your clients. And I understand that the participation by Jason O'Connell is what you claim gives specific jurisdiction here. What they've said, though, is that absent a possessory interest in the cattle actually seized, that there's no actual wrongful conduct in terms of this alleged seizure. So how do you respond to that, given the fact that the cattle actually seized were not steers, and the invoice that you have with MCM is 554 steers?
Apples and oranges. Let me.
In other words, obviously, you'd have a conversion claim if it were, if there were 554 steers that were taken, and that would be a tort committed in Texas, and they're converting your actual possessory interest. Since none of these are steers, this appears to be an asset of either MCM or an asset of Lion Farm. And therefore, it appears to be more of an impairment of a possible remedy that you may have as opposed to some type of tort against the possessory interest of the plaintiffs.
If I understand the court's question, let me see if I can make sure I understand the premise of it. The question is, because we don't know that the 554 cattle that are identified on the invoice that gives rise to our first claim, we don't know that those 554 were online farms and part of what was seized. How do we bridge that gap, or
right,
how do we connect the dots? I think that happens both legally and factually. Let me talk about the legal reason first. Legally, I don't think it matters if Jason O'Connell is only acting on behalf of MCM's interest in trying to seize their cattle, because our underlying claim is a fraud claim. And our fraud claim is that Jason O'Connell called Jeff Cox, who's our principal, and says, look, we've got a problem in Texas. We found out about this fraud scheme from Tony Lyon. We're going to go down and take care of this. We're all going to gather up the cattle. We're going to group these cattle. We're going to make a recovery for everybody. And I'm paraphrasing the specifics of our fraud allegation, but they're in our petition. But essentially, the fraud allegations that Jason O'Connell, against Jason O'Connell, are that we will go take care of this, and we will gather these assets that may be found on Tony Lyon's farm, and we will protect everybody's interest from those assets. And so my client, acting in reliance upon those statements, stays in Nebraska, does not come down here, does not participate in the recovery.
But is that an actual cause of action impairing an opportunity for remedy?
Well, I think the cause of action is a fraud claim. It's a false statement. In other words, because by the time he's making that statement, he's already come to Texas. He's already signed the documents that we refer to, the July 1st, 2015 agreement.
But he signed them with regard to cattle that you had no possessory interest in.
Well, but we certainly had a claim against Tony Lyon, a direct claim against Tony Lyon as well, and their assets were things that we could have come down here and taken the same sort of remedy steps that Midwestern Cattle was taking. In other words, we could have done the exact same thing. We could have met them at the barn door and said, we're here too, we should get those. But instead of us taking action, we refrained from taking that action and sustained damages because we lost the right to seize whatever cattle or seize our share of whatever cattle were on Lyon Farms. The factual distinction that I would make is there's testimony in the record, and we cited in the reply that Tony Lyons himself said, yes, the 554 cattle that I was planning to sell Jeff Cox, I had moved those on down the road, but I had obtained part of his cattle fraud scheme that he was operating. I had obtained additional cattle that were on my property, and some of those cattle were designated to be sold to make up the difference to pay Northwest Cattle Feeders, my client, when it came time for their cattle to be delivered. And so I think we connect to those cattle both factually from that standpoint as to the fact that we would have had some sort of, according to Tony Lyons, we would have had some sort of remedy as to those cattle for our own failure delivery of our own invoice.
Okay. So you're now claiming some type of possessory interest due to what Lyons has testified about the 554 steer were sold, but I bought these other cattle for purposes of selling them and giving the proceeds to Northwest et al.
I think there's evidence in the record.
Okay. Is that an allegation that you've actually made with regard to the pleadings before this court?
No, Your Honor. Our specific allegation that we base our jurisdiction claims as to Jason O'Connell is straightforward fraud. You made a false statement to us that you knew was false. You intended for us to rely upon that by not taking any action to come down here ourselves and protect our own interest while MCM was down here protecting its interest. In other words, because MCM wanted to be first in line and get their hands on whatever assets they had. I guess to answer the court's question, we would have had no more and no less of a right to those cattle that were on Lyon Farms property June 30th of 2015 than MCM did. But by defrauding us and by sitting there telling us, you stay put, we'll go take care of this and we'll work together, they were able to come to Texas and on July 1, 2015, get their hands on all, I forget the number, 805 head of cattle that were found on Lyon Farms. In other words, by defrauding us, they were able to move themselves ahead of the line and exercise their own actions to seize those cattle to the detriment of us where we couldn't. I don't think I can answer the court straightforward and say...
So the only possessory interest MCM ended up with was one that was negotiated by the agreement on July 1st.
That's correct.
Lyon.
That's correct. I don't think there's any testimony. I don't think there's any evidence in the record to show that they had any sort of superior possessory interest to the cattle than we did on June 30th, 2015. And that gets back to the third issue that I wanted to address is the operative facts. In other words, the Moki Mack case, which is the jurisdiction case on point, talks about the courts are going to look at what are the operative facts, what is going to be the focus of the trial, and what is going to be the majority of the evidence as to the allegations concerning the party that you're seeking jurisdiction over. And here, with respect to Jason O'Connell, the focus of the trial and the majority of the evidence are going to be on those two items we've talked about. The representation, you stay in Nebraska, we'll take care of this, and the physical act of seizing the cattle, which Jason O'Connell performed on July the 1st, 2015, to our detriment. And so we believe, even under Moki Mack, that this case fits within the operative facts. The operative facts occurred in Texas. That's consistent with this court's opinion in Mountain States, which is the legal malpractice case, even though you had two Colorado residents that were one suing another. The underlying lawsuit occurred in Texas, and therefore that created, it was an operative fact that created jurisdiction. Unless the court has any more questions, I'll reserve any further comments.
I have a question, Mr. Boyd. The scheme of what Jason O'Connell was doing in Texas, from the pleadings and the brief and everything I've read, which is a lot, stems from a meeting at the bank in which the bank was calling in O'Connell and O'Connell to say, you guys got a guarantee with me, and I got a $1.3 million deficit on this account from fraud created by Lyon. And so this, the follow-through on the claim of fraud and the availing of the laws of the state of Texas by the O'Connells comes down to that the overall premise was to pay the bank and get us off our guarantees.
And more importantly, ought to pay the bank first. They wanted to be first in line, and we believe that was the purpose of that meeting at Sidney to Braspel. And then from that meeting, Jason comes directly to Texas and implements the plan. I'll confess, we have not yet had the opportunity to pose the O'Connells to get the details of what happened in that meeting, but for purposes of jurisdiction, it's their burden of proof to negate what I think, what I hear the court saying, and that is they had a meeting in Nebraska for a plan to go do this and to implement it in Texas, and nothing they offered the court negated that as a basis of jurisdiction.
And so the actual possessory interest in the cattle would not be a gravamen to the claim in terms of the dispensing of the liability of the O'Connells at the bank on a guarantee.
That is correct, Your Honor. I don't think they had any possessory, as I said, I don't think they had any greater possessory interest than anybody at that point other than Tony Lyons. I mean, he was there on his property.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The court should affirm the order that was issued by the trial court because this appeal is about legal and factual sufficiency. And if you look in the record, you'll find that there is no evidence to support the theory that Northwest Cattle has put out as its theory for personal jurisdiction in this case.
But it is your burden to come forward with evidence refuting their pleadings.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so what evidence do you have refuting?
There's a lot of evidence in the record, and the evidence in the record is that Jason came down with, that Jason O'Connell went to a meeting at the bank, that what they discussed at the bank was the fact that Tony Lyon had committed a fraudulent check-kiting scheme against MCM, that they decided that Jason would come down to Texas to see what he could do about it. He did come down with Tim Correll, who also testified, that at some point, either at the bank or in the car, it's a little bit unclear, they said, we need to get a hold of whatever cattle there is at the Lyon Ranch and see if we can't recoup some of our losses. That when they got there on the way to Texas, but not in Texas, Jason called Jeff Cox and said, we have a problem in Texas. Jason and Tim went to Texas. Tony Lyon signed a deed, for lack of a better word. I may be getting wrong exactly what it's called. And it signed over the inventory of all the cattle that was at the Lyon Ranch to MCM. And Tim Correll and Jason started trying to decide where it was going to go. The evidence is that they did that, and Jason left. After Jason left, Jeff Cox, the principal of Northwest Cattle, got to Texas. He was there. There's evidence he went to the ranch, and when he got there, Tim Correll was there, who works with MCM, and Tony Lyon was there, and Owen Lyon was there. And they had a discussion, and Tim and Jeff talked about the fact that they were going to move the cattle and what MCM was doing to move the cattle. That's the evidence. There's no evidence in the record that Jason and Jeff met in Perrin, Texas, looked each other in the eye, and Jason said, don't worry, I'm going to take care of this.
Don't they just have to plead that? I mean, as long as in this type of a situation, we have to take their pleadings as true, don't we? In the absence of controverting evidence?
Well, once the, what the cases say is that once you put in an affidavit that says, I didn't do any of this, basically, that then you have evidence. Everybody has to put on evidence. And the burden of proof is on us. And we have the evidence that shows what happened. And there is no evidence to support, there's no evidence that anybody ever said, we're going to, MCM is going to take these cattle and sell them. And we're going to share it with all the victims of Tony Lyons' fraudulent scheme. That is not said anywhere in this record. And no, it is not good enough for them to just have an allegation, because what...
You're saying that Jeff Cox doesn't say that?
No, he does not. He definitely does not. So, and I have... In our brief, we take the... There's a listing, I'm not sure what page it's on, and it's a listing of the, a summary of what they say is the evidence that Jeff Cox said that. And if you look at it, what it says, and in that part they don't say that Jason called, but they certainly say, Jason called on his way to Texas and said, Jeff, we have a problem in Texas. And it doesn't say this on that page.
That's the first that plaintiffs have any idea that the 554 steer that they purchased might not be there. Communication from Jason to Jeff on the way to Texas.
He doesn't say anything that they're not there, that those cows aren't there.
Did he just call and say we have a problem and didn't explicate what the problem was?
As far as we know, that's what the record shows. So there's nothing else in the record about that. But the 554 steers had already been delivered to Northwest. Jeff had seen them and then had entered an agreement with Tony to graze them that MCM wasn't a part of. So it wouldn't be, you wouldn't expect Jason to call and say, your steers are in jeopardy, because that wasn't a part of MCM.
But at some point in time, the record reflects that 554 steers were being held by Lion in Texas for the benefit and for the future sale and proceeds for the plaintiffs in this case, correct?
That's not correct. The sale had already occurred. So the sale occurred on March 31st, 2015. MCM sold 554 steers to Northwest Cattle Feeders on March 31st, 2015.
Right.
Tony and Jeff had a side deal that I think that they
called. Okay, where were the steers when that first transaction occurred?
At some point, they got to the Lion Farm, and Tony and Jeff had a deal they called TJ something or other, and they would feed those, Northwest Cattle Feeders would buy them. They would make arrangements to feed those steers, and then they would
at
sell them.
At Lion Farm.
Well, there was another farm that they also fed them at, but they had done this numerous times. So Jeff came, he saw the 554 steers, laid eyes on them at the Lion Farm. At the Lion Farm. And then sometime after that, between March, now that's a long time in cattle years, or cattle months, between March and July, when Jeff got down there after Jason was gone, they were gone. And Tony said they were gone. Or the evidence is in the record that Tony told Jeff, yeah, those 554 are gone. There's no evidence.
They're gone to Nebraska.
No. They weren't gone to Nebraska. They had been sold.
Okay.
So he was supposed to keep them.
Already sold.
Yeah.
They just had the cattle that were on the ranch that they moved to Nebraska.
Well, they didn't move the 800 head that were on the ranch. They moved 37 cows.
Where did the rest of them go?
There were different arrangements that were made. You don't just move 800 head over a couple of days. So there were various arrangements that were made. They signed the bill of sale over to MCM, and MCM started liquidating that inventory for MCM. And there is no evidence that anybody at MCM ever said, we're going to share the proceeds. So if you look, and I want to make sure that I hit this. I had some things that I wanted to say. But if you look at Mokey Mac, it says, whenever you have specific jurisdiction. The way you figure that out for purposeful availment is you look at the operative facts, the acts of each defendant, and a substantial connection between the acts of each defendant and the operative facts. So you get three columns. You say, here's what the defendant did in Texas, not what somebody else did. It can't be what Tony did or anything else. It has to be what the defendant did. Here's the operative fact that we're looking at. Now, can we make a substantial connection between that? All right. So in the original brief, they said the operative fact is the sale, but it can't be the sale. And this is similar to Moki Mac, but I don't want to go into all that right now. But what they say in their reply is that the operative fact is that Jason came to Texas, he seized the cattle and sold it, and he was representing to Northwest that the cattle found on the Lion Farms was going to be used for everybody's benefit. All right, in their opening brief, they say it's just the seizure of the cattle. But it can't be that. Because if Jason came, first of all, it can't be that Jason came to Texas. Because if Jason came to Texas, they wouldn't have a claim if there wasn't anything else. If Jason came to Texas on July 1st and got Tony to sign over the inventory at the Lion Farm and nothing else happened, there still wouldn't be a claim by Northwest or Northwest Cattle. Because Northwest Cattle doesn't have any interest, just as along the lines you were going over before, in that cattle. Those cattle belong to Lion Farm, as far as anybody ever knows. I mean, in this case, as far as I know. So the only way that you get to a claim is if you add an operative fact, and that is a representation. And you can't say there was a representation, and then you look at all the evidence about what happened. All these people were asked about what happened. Nobody ever says that Jason said we're going to share any proceeds. So you say, what is the operative fact, representation? We know it's not trip to Texas, because in a lot of cases, they always have some trip to Texas, and still don't, maybe not still find jurisdiction. And if I have time, we'll talk about Moki Mac, because it was similar in that way. So you have to have a representation, all right? And so then you look at the acts of the defendant in Texas that relate to that. There are none. Who said it? What did they say? When did they say it? And where were they? That's not in the record. So we know that when Jason left the bank, Points West Bank in Sydney, Nebraska, and headed on his way to Texas, that he called Jeff, and Jeff wasn't in Texas. He said, we have a problem in Texas. Nobody was in Texas, except for Tony Lyon.
Well, the problem was in Texas.
that's right. You're right about that. But the problem for MCM was that Tony Lyon was check kiting. And the problem for Northwest Cattle Feeders
was... Well, he was check kiting as an agent for MCM.
Well...
He was check kiting with authority that MCM gave him with regard to their bank account.
Well, that's a different case.
Well, it implies who he is vis-a-vis the plaintiffs, though. So basically, Jason comes down to Texas, cuts a deal with his own agent to effectively impair any remedies that might be available to the plaintiffs, and does so based upon some type of representation or failure to disclose that, in fact, that's exactly what he's about to do.
But there's no evidence that there was a representation. And as far as the failure to disclose, there's no evidence that would support...
Why would he not have a duty if, in fact, if it's his own agent who had been making misrepresentations with regard to where the 554 were?
I don't think that Tony did. At that point, whenever Jason got the agreement from Tony, there was nothing about the 554. It wasn't until after that.
Well, there was a sale from MCM to the plaintiffs of 554.
And delivery.
And delivery. But it's a delivery to the Lion Farm, where the agent that arranged for the sale of the 554 makes an agreement that I'll keep these for you and get them ready for sale. The sale will be conducted by him, okay? So at what point in time did Lyon quit being an agent for MCM and become his own agent vis-a-vis the plaintiffs under the circumstances? And if he never quit being an agent for MCM, then how is an agreement that's reached by Jason in Texas to withdraw assets of Lyon Farm from the availability of a remedy, how is that not something that should have been disclosed by Jason?
Okay, a couple things. Number one.
In other words, there has to be some type of duty. I'll grant you that. And that's been your basic argument, is we didn't have a duty because there's no possessory interest in any of the cattle, and two, it wasn't our deal. The problem is, and the thing that complicates it is Lion is the one, okay, who is your agent.
And we're not Jason's agent.
Well, he's MCM's agent.
Right.
Okay? And it is his conduct while your agent that gets all of you in this mess.
Well, not for the 554, and there's evidence on that in the record. There is a discussion in the deposition of Jeff Cox about T&J and how that doesn't have anything to do with MCM. So at the point that they took delivery and they went off on their own joint venture, they became joint venturers, Tony and Jeff Cox did. There was no more MCM in that. MCM wasn't going to get any money out of it. MCM didn't have any control over that. That was being controlled by Tony and Jason together. Tony and Jeff.
Transaction which gives to MCM a possessory interest that they do not have on July 1st of 2015 is all of a sudden back to being a transaction, not between an independent Lion, okay? This is, we're coming down to talk to you because you messed us over. We gave you authority for this check writing authority, etc. You've done this, so you're going to hand over all of this property to try and make this good.
Right.
So how is that not a little bit of self-dealing to the impairment of any remedy that might be had by Northwest with regard to that property? Because that wasn't y'all's property at the time of the agreement.
But it wasn't Northwest either.
It was Tony's, and y'all were the only reason you had any right to ask him that is because you had the hammer on top of him for the fraud that he had committed to you.
Anytime a person takes steps to mitigate their damages or try to recoup their losses or go after and file a lawsuit, they're impairing the remedies of others that come after them. We weren't doing anything different than that. And fiduciary duty is...
Except the allegation here is the conversations that were had, okay, prevented them from doing the very thing that you were doing and Jason was doing in Texas, which is trying to execute a remedy to a situation that a tortfeasor who had done both of you wrong.
Except that there's no evidence of that. And there has to be evidence to support what they say once there's a denial of the basis for jurisdiction. And you need to look at the whole record. And you look at the whole record, it supports what the trial court found in this case. There's no evidence.
What do you mean there's no evidence that you guys... Jason ended up in Texas... Okay? Whether the agreement on July 1st was coerced or not, that was an attempt by Jason on behalf of MCM and saving his own bacon with regard to the guarantee to obtain assets that would mitigate not only MCM's damages, but also his as a guarantor. Okay?
Right. There's evidence
and
that
in doing so, taking away a possibility that the plaintiffs would have to obtain some type of remedy with regard to those assets as well. So basically, you want us to basically say that it's a first come, first serve. We had the right to do it. We did it. And nothing that we did in terms of conversations with regard to the plaintiffs here caused them to forego the remedy because they thought they were included in the remedy that we were obtaining.
And what I'm saying that there is no evidence of is the last part of what you just said. Them foregoing, the us causing them not to do anything to... We called them and put them on notice while we were on our way down here. Hey, there's something wrong. There's no evidence that Jason said, don't do anything about it, I'll take care of it. That isn't even in the pleading.
It's right here in paragraph 4.18. In reliance upon the representations by Jason O'Connell, Jeff Cox, at all times acting as plaintiff's representative, refrain from taking any direct action to possession of the cattle found at the Lion's Farms.
But I heard what you just said, and I just think that that's different than what you just said, and I hope that I'm right about that. But there is no evidence that that was said. There is no who, what, and where of what was said that caused that. And there's no evidence that Jeff Cox was in Texas when that happened. And if you're trying to look at what Jason did as far as coming down here and getting Tony to sign over that cattle is not a claim. So now when you look at the other thing, what is the claim about? What is the operative fact? Because Monkey Mac says that's what you got to look at. That's the representation. And when you try to pin that down so we can see if it has a substantial connection with actions that are in Texas, you're not going to be able to do it. Because there's no who, what, when, and where of that. And that is what personal jurisdiction is about. And if you look at their pleading, you won't find that in there either. You won't find it that Jeff Cox was sitting in Texas.
Your time has expired, but thank you.
But I realize that. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to sort of shift us back from what sounds like a no-evidence motion for summary judgment argument back to personal jurisdiction, which is the issue we're on here today. And procedurally, the way it works is just what Justice Walker was talking about. We plead it. They have to specifically negate it. And if you look at the declaration of Jason O'Connell, which is what the findings of fact were based upon, they don't even address paragraphs 4.17, 4.18, 4.19, 4.20 of our third amended petition, which talk about the specific representations. Could have easily said, Jason could have said, I never said that. I never said that, whether I was in Texas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Kansas. You tell me where I am. I got those backwards. On I-35, I've never said that. They didn't do it. They did not carry their burden to negate specific jurisdiction as to Jason O'Connell, and that really ends the inquiry for purposes of this limited appeal. We will have arguments down the road about whether we have evidence to support those representations. I think it is. We cite to Jeff Cox's deposition testimony. It's in the record citations. We will have discussions about the duty question, which I think is a fair question from Justice Bergwa. And I think what I would argue is the duty here was not to commit fraud. We all have a duty not to make a false misrepresentation. And that's what Jason O'Connell did. That's the allegation.
Doesn't there have to be some type of relationship that is specific to that relationship? Because if, in fact, what they're saying is true, okay, that the relationship between MCM and Northwestern, okay, ended as to those specific cattle with the payment on that invoice, and that everything else that happened between Lyon and plaintiffs as to the maintaining and sale of those cattle, okay, was done with regard to that relationship, then aren't you then just two wronged individuals by Mr. Lyon, okay, who have the same assets, the same turnip to try and get blood out of, right, and they beat you to it?
I don't disagree with the premise of the question at all.
What case law says that there's duties between two possible creditors?
Well, there's always, first of all, obviously we disagree with the fact that he was no longer their agent after the 554, but let's take everything they say at face value for purposes of the court's question. There is, I mean, two independent creditors competing to get the same assets. That's, you know, all's fair in love and war, except common law duties not to commit fraud. And that's the specific allegation we're making here, is that Jason O'Connell, after meeting with his bankers and knowing he's on a personal guarantee for the $1.3 million shortfall, he meets with Tom O'Connell and the bankers, and they said, look, we've got to get to Texas. There may not be enough assets to make everybody whole here. We've got to get there first and get our hands on these assets. We have a
The duty there only arises... Okay, if there's some type of transaction, okay, evidenced between Jason on behalf of MCM or on behalf of himself and your clients, that we agree that we're going to go down. We've got the better angle online to be able to get this done. We're gonna go take care of this, and we'll share, you know, whatever the assets are.
I don't think that.
And if there's no agreement with regard to that, then I can make any representation I want to you because I have no duty to be truthful with you under the circumstances. If there's not some underlying transaction,
I'm not sure I would think that there's a common law duty not to commit fraud between any person, A and B, especially with respect to what is now effectively a common set of assets that as independent creditors we are trying to get our hands on.
But so, you still need to be able to articulate what the underlying transaction is, and what's the agreement, because the fraud has to be perpetrated for some purpose.
Correct. Our allegation is they made the representation, and I think for purposes of common law fraud, what we have to show is reliance. We're not arguing fraudulent inducement, that they induced us into a written agreement based on their false representation. We're arguing common law fraud and that we justifiably relied on their false representation, which is the elements of common law fraud. And Jeff Cox justifiably relied, as the allegations go, and I grant you, we'll have a jury trial one day to resolve all these issues, but as the allegations go for purposes of jurisdiction, Jeff Cox justifiably relied on that representation by staying in Nebraska, letting Jason O'Connell come down here, believing Jason O'Connell was going to be taking the actions that were consistent with his representation. As it turns out, the allegations go, Jason O'Connell was down here not looking out for what he told Jeff Cox, but taking care of MCM and Jason O'Connell and Tom O'Connell first. So, and I see my time has expired, and we would respectfully request that the court reverse as to Jason O'Connell and Tom O'Connell. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you all very much for your arguments here today. We appreciate them. Your case is submitted.